I took a gamble. I think it's going to pay off because then it will not make today or last week super long. We're in the middle of the story of the crossing of the Jordan. We have stepped out in faith. The priests have stepped out in faith and are now standing in the middle of the Jordan River. As they're standing there, we talked about how the people finally passed by the priests. And again, not fully going into it, but I think it's important to remind ourselves that at the beginning, as the priests went into the middle of the Jordan River, the Israelite nation was about a half mile away. So again, this is pretty scary for the priests. As they have stepped into the middle, they got their feet wet, the waters stopped up a couple miles away, and as they're standing there, they're saying, let's get a move on with this. So, but at first of all, they finally then tell the Israelite nation, let's get going. They're still a half mile away. So they've got to start walking down because they got to see this miracle. It was really incredible. But now they're going, and I'm sure the priest standing in the middle are like, why couldn't you guys have gotten a little bit of a head start? Like, okay, you saw the miracle, let's get moving. So as they're now crossing over, and someone asked the question, it's a great question to ask, about how many people are there? We're looking somewhere between 2 to 6 million people. And then, of course, and I'm always thankful, and it's great having George back because he gives some really interesting insights. Along with 2 to 6 million people are all the supplies for 2 to 6 million people. I remember as a quartermaster in Boy Scouts having to buy food when we went on camping trips. And when you do that, you have to think of all the food you have to have. You have to think of all the tents, the poles, the stoves. You got all this gear you've got to worry about. Who here thinks they could plan for somewhere between 2 to 6 million people? No, thank you. I'm not interested. So not only do you have 2 to 6 million people crossing the Jordan River, but how many cows does that entail? Donkeys, sheep, wood, firewood, supplies, bread, wheat, and, you know, all the other people. And then, of course, you got little ones who are stragglers. I'd be like, Mama, pick up your baby and get her across this Jordan River fast. And then you got Uncle Frank who moves a little bit slowly, and he's kind of like, come on, dude, can someone help Frank out, please? He is walking super slow. We need to get him across this real fast. This would be nerve-wracking. But this, I think, is an important lesson for us. A lesson that when we step out in faith, the temptation is to quickly cross to the other side. Like, okay, I took a step of faith, and that was fun and all, but now I don't want to do it anymore. Or, yes, that helped me grow in my faith, but now I'm done growing in my faith because I'm really nervous, and I'd rather go back to something that is safe and secure. Human beings are designed, for some reason, to seek equilibrium. We like to step out in faith, but only for a certain amount of time. We can stretch the boundaries, but then we really would like it to snap back a little bit so that we're back in an area of comfort. The priests, in one of the few times throughout the Bible that we see them doing something really faith-filled, they are standing firm in the middle of the Jordan River. They have no idea when the water's going to come. They have no idea if they're going to die that day. They have no clue. They're trusting that because they followed God, God was not going to somehow mysteriously abandon them and say, well, thank you for stepping in faith. You're now swept away in the waters of the Jordan. If you take the step in faith and you're standing firm on the promises of God, then God will stay with you. It's not to say bad things aren't going to come. It's not to say that when they finally entered into the promised land, as they walked into these battles, everyone just died and they didn't have to do any battles. No, that's not it. There's still struggle. There's still even death. There's still even disease. But the people knew, no matter where we go, if we are trusting God, God will sustain us. God will be with us. So if you have stepped out in faith, maybe through believing in God, maybe saying, you know what, God has done all this for me. I need to trust him with my eternal salvation. God will sustain you, period. Or maybe you've stepped out in doing something like mission work, or maybe mission work that's here locally, or maybe that's your whole world has been turned upside down and you're going to God and saying, God, my world's turned upside down, but I'm going to trust in you. Stand firm. Follow what happens. And sometimes we need some reminders along the way. So let's see what happens with some of these reminders. Chapter 4 of Joshua. We're in the middle of the story. Yes? Is that how far away they're supposed to be? I have no idea. 251 kilometers. I ain't no Brit. Do we got any British people here? 150 miles? Oh, well, there we go. All right. Just Google it. You'll find the answers. All right, Joshua chapter 4. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe. I would have loved to have seen this. I love doing this with little kids because it's always funny. We did this with the preschool recently. I'm like, I need some volunteers. And immediately everyone's like, me. And I'm like, I haven't even told you what you're supposed to do yet. What if I tell you to like get down and give me 20 push-ups? Or, you know, give me all the money in your pocket or something like that. So here's Joshua. He's, you go out, choose 12 people. Hey, I don't know how loud does he have to yell to get this number, but I need 12. Remember the volunteers that he'd had before? Here's the 12 volunteers. What is their job? Tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan from right where the priests stood, and to carry them over with you and put them down at the place where you stay tonight. Do we have 12 volunteers to go back into the middle of the Jordan River where the priests are still standing, and we sure hope that the Jordan River doesn't magically start flowing again and you'll die along with them? Anyone feeling confident about this? Now, again, with the Jordan River stopped, maybe this one isn't too hard of a step of faith, but it's still a step of faith. Go down, and we need to pick up 12 rocks. Now, I personally would have chosen something small. Like, I would be like, okay, river looks clear. I'm going to dash into the middle, pick up a small pebble, and run back. But that's not what God is asking. We don't need pebbles. We don't need rocks. And maybe not even stone. We need some boulder-type things, because God is going to have a memorial built. I am one of the people, there's two camps when it comes to what's being built. Either there are two memorials built, or one memorial is built and then it's moved. So I'm going to tell you why I believe it's two actual memorials. It makes more sense. Go down there, you're going to pick them up and you're going to carry them back. So Joshua called together 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder. Okay? No, it's not, okay, I got a stone on my shoulder here. No, this has got to be something that you got to hoist up. This is a bigger rock. According to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, to serve as a sign among you. We're going to create a memorial. We're going to create a remembrance. And I think this is important because sometimes I think when we think of symbols and their meaning, we run into two problems. One problem is we sometimes tend to worship the symbol. So you might be at a church that has a big, huge, gigantic cross. And let's say something happens and the cross is taken down and moved. And some people say, you can't do that. That cross is important and special, so much so that if you take it down, I can't worship anymore. They become so enamored by an object that the object has more meaning than what it's supposed to signify. If something happened to this physical building, let's say a global pandemic, and you could not come here, would that stop worship from happening? Absolutely not. Even if something happens and this place isn't even here anymore, we have a giant earthquake and the whole place crumbles, this building is simply a symbol of worship to God. Throughout the Israelite nation, they actually had problems with this symbol worship. They had problems when they took some of these symbols like Aaron's rod and the Ten Commandment tablets and putting it into the Ark of the Covenant. They started worshiping the object as opposed to the person that it symbolizes. But beyond that, if you go to the other direction, we just sometimes forget the significance. We sometimes lose sight of how important it is. The symbol is still there, but we don't grasp the gravity of the situation. Probably the easiest symbol to show this with is the symbol of the wedding ring. Right, wear a wedding ring right here. This is actually my engagement ring. If you don't know the story, Heather proposed to me, Balboa Island, with this ring, and I told her no. I shut her down. She was right there in front of the Ferris wheel that goes around, and I said, nope, not going to do it. Little did she know I had already bought the ring, and I was going to propose to her like a week or two later. But that's Heather. She's always out in front. She always wants, let's do this now. This ring that I wear on my finger is important, but sometimes I forget. I don't ever walk around going, gosh, am I married? No, I never like forget that I'm married. But what I do forget is the significance of it. It's very easy, especially when you ask people to go back to your wedding day. That was a long time ago for me. I can't remember what I had for dinner last night. No, wait, I had pizza. That's right. I can't remember what I had for dinner last week, but I can tell you absolutely everything that happened on my wedding night. It was so significant to me. Sometimes I forget the significance. Would you say that the crossing of the Jordan River was a massive miracle? That was huge. And God wanted to make sure that though they probably would never forget it, they might lose the significance of the miracle. So all of them going back into the middle, sometimes that happens. Let me tell you, I find it necessary to regularly go back to things in my life that tie me to God and remember how important they were. I vividly remember my confirmation. I vividly remember my wedding day. I vividly remember the start of Searchlight. I vividly remember my ordination in my hometown of Vacaville, California. I remember all these things, and sometimes it's important to go back there because the activities of the day seem to lessen the luster of the significance of the events. As time goes on, they just seem to lose their specialness. Go back in the middle of the river and discover it again. Restore unto me the joy of my salvation. That's what the psalmist wrote. As he had started to lose sight of how important it was that God had come and saved him, he had to go back and say, I remember this. Now, Lord, restore unto me the joy of my salvation, because I've lost the joy of my salvation. I've lost that shine. It's been covered over with dirt and grime and dust, and sometimes I need to take it out and be reminded of it once again. Do not look upon a cross that's either up in a church or on your neck or on your car and let it lose its significance. Go back to the time that you were baptized and remember that God has claimed you as his own. As you start remembering these things, all of a sudden, it helps you to stand firm, even if you're standing in the middle of a dry Jordan River. So grab these stones. We're going to make a memorial. This is where there is some evidence that actually what happened as the person writing the story is writing things thematically and non-chronologically, it is possible that already at this moment, Joshua went and set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan, and they're going to go into the middle of the Jordan and pick up those 12 stones and move it. I think that what's going to happen is actually there's going to be two monuments. So let's keep reading, and I'll tell you why, the way it lays it out. Middle of verse 6, in the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people forever. So this is not something that you just do for yourself, but there's this idea of passing it on to the next generation. I'll talk about that more in a little bit, but especially the importance of having children understand this. And we're going to be celebrating it again today, the celebration of another memorial, another remembrance with bread and wine, the body and blood of Christ. It's tempting to just focus on, oh, I'm getting bread, I'm getting wine or grape juice, and, you know, is this going to be done right, and how fast is it going to take place, and, yeah, I know I just do this, I don't know exactly what it means. And then your kids ask you, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, why do you eat bread and drink wine at church? Do not say, let's go ask the pastor and have him answer the question for you. Wrong answer. You know what the answer is? You tell them. And if you don't know, then you probably haven't been coming to Searchlight too long because I talk about it every single week. And maybe you're like, oh, he does? Maybe I should listen this time. Yeah. Well, when we hit there, listen to it. Because again, it's not for me to teach your kids that. I'll teach your kids that. But you know what is more powerful? Do you know who spends more time with your kids than me? You. You have way more power. You have way more influence. So tell the children. Children are important. That's the reason why we have them come and worship. This is the reason why we then go and teach them. We want them to know all about what God is doing. So verse 8. So the Israelites did as Joshua commanded them. They took 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, according to the number of the tribes of Israelites, as the Lord had told Joshua. And they carried them over with them to their camp, which is several miles away. Is that what you were asking? Yeah. So the camp, it's not like, let's go into the middle of the river, we'll pick up 12 stones, and we'll go to the side of the river and put the monument there. No, the monument is going to be in a place called Gilgal, and it is several miles away. Again, my heart hurts for the priests. Yes, yes. Harry, yes, that's right. Pick up the rock. Where are you taking that? Gilgal, get moving. You are slow. You got 2 miles to go, bro. Get out of here. They're standing there and waiting for these 12 guys. Two to six million people are watching all this. 12 guys come back in the river. They've got to pick up a rock, and then they've got to go 2 miles, and then they've got to come back. And there's the priests standing there. I sure hope the Jordan River doesn't. And there's the way this story is being told. It's kind of building it up, building it up, building it up. So they pick up the rocks, and they go far away. And they carried them with it. Verse 9. And then, this is where I think we have evidence that I think two monuments are built. Joshua set up the 12 stones that had been in the middle of the Jordan at the spot where the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant had stood. You have a little text note on there. You could also translate it that Joshua also set up 12 stones at the foot of the priests. I mean, what are you going to do? While those 12 guys are carrying rocks 2 miles away on their shoulder and it's a heavy boulder, I think that what Joshua is doing is he's going down and he's grabbing 12 stones and he is setting them up right where the priests are at. And you think, well, that seems kind of stupid, doesn't it? Because what's going to, oh, by the way, spoiler alert, the Jordan River is going to flow again. And the 12 rocks that are there, are they going to be shown? Are they going to be seen? That they may not be visible to the naked eye. Again, a reminder for us. Sometimes the significance of the activities of our life are not readily and easily seen by others, but that should not then make us consider doing dumb things. Analogy. If I was going to go out with some of my guy friends to a bar and I took off my wedding ring, would that be a good thing? No, that would not be a good thing. That's a bad thing. I do know that sometimes guys work in construction and sometimes they have to do other things. But I'm not talking that. I'm talking you're specifically going out with the guys and you want to let everyone know that you are not married. That would be the same thing if you go out and you deliberately try to make sure no one knows that you are a Christian. If you purposely hide that, you've got to be careful. Because sometimes none of us walk around with some little halo over our head saying, this person's a Christian. Though I really think that would make it really easy to live my life a little bit more. Who can I be rude to? Who can I cut off in traffic? Who can I cut in front of the Starbucks line? And then who can I pay for it with my Starbucks? Oh, there's some halos behind us. Well, this is awesome. I'll pay for their... I'm glad that no one can like look at me and see it. But if the symbol is hidden, that shouldn't mean we live as if the symbol is not important. I think some of us shed our Christianity a little bit too easily because no one can see it. And I think that's the reason why there's these two memorials. This memorial in the middle of the Jordan River, so that even though it is hidden by the flood of the Jordan River, there is still another memorial that's set up a couple of miles away. So there's Joshua. And now he's setting up this thing. And of course, again, the priests are standing there holding the Ark of the Covenant, praying that the flood doesn't start coming down now. 12 guys just carried some boulders that way and they're gone for a while. Joshua sets up some rocks and they're like, great. Joshua, can we leave? Do you need us in the middle of the, there's no purpose for us being here. And Joshua is probably telling them, stand firm. Don't move yet. God's got a plan, and it's going to be okay. So he set them up. Verse 10, now the priests who carried the ark remained standing in the middle of the Jordan until everything the Lord had commanded Joshua was done by the people, just as Moses had directed Joshua. So again, highlighting the faith of the priests is great because sometimes we need to look to other people to help us in our faith, right? I think we all have that. Mentors, spiritual inspirations in our life. Don't worship them. Joshua's just a dude. These priests are just guys. But sometimes it's good to see this and be inspired. And let me tell you, I don't know how many times I've been inspired by all of you in some of the things you do as you step out in faith. It's incredible. End of verse 10. The people hurried over, and as soon as all of them had crossed, the ark of the Lord and the priests came to the other side while the people watched. So finally, the priests are told they go. But we always got to be reminded of this interesting group of people. 2.5 tribes stayed behind on the other side of the Jordan River. And those 2.5 tribes, though, were told by God, yeah, I'll give you permission to stay there, but you have to send your fighting people along with the Ark of the Covenant because you've got to help them conquer this entire land. And that's what they reminded. The men of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over armed in front of the Israelites as Moses had directed them. About 40,000 armed for battle crossed over before the Lord to the plains of Jericho for war. So if we do the census that was back in Numbers 26 and we're talking about fighting men, we're looking about 600,000 fighting men, which is why about 2 million, 3 million, 4, 5, 6 million. Heck, I had a hard time, leading youth on camping trips. Like, they're crazy. Like, having 12 is more than enough. Or we go to the National Youth Gathering, and we got, 6. Man, oh, whoa. Thank you, Madison. I could not imagine 2 to 6 million. So about 40,000 armed for war crossover before the Lord to the plains of Jericho for war. If you want to look at the numbers, you can go to Numbers 26. It talks about the census of the fighting people. That day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they revered him all the days of his life, just as they had revered Moses. Joshua is now established truly as this leader. Then the Lord said to Joshua, command the priest carrying the Ark of the Testimony to come up out of the water. So Joshua commanded the priest, come up out of the Jordan. It's like, finally, thank you, Joshua. And the priest came up out of the river carrying the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. No sooner had they set their feet on the dry ground than the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and ran at flood stage before. Again, I don't know. I believe when we get to heaven, we're going to have a lot of instant replays because I really want to see this. Is this something where the guys in front get their feet like on top of the bank and then the water starts flowing so that just as they get up, like the last one's like, go, 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 and they get up there? Or was it like the last ones get up and then the water? I don't know. All I know is if I was the priest in the back, I would have gladly switched places with the priest in the front. But remember what the priest in the front had to do the first time. Now the priest in the back has to trust God's got you. God's going to take care of you. Sometimes there might even be some close calls. There might even be close calls you don't even know about. But God has you. Trust that God is going to take care of you. And then it gives us kind of a great little summary starting at verse 19. On the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. That's significant because this is now the final fulfillment of the promise that God had given many years ago. Because on the 10th day of the first month, back when they were in Egypt, that's when they would select the Passover lamb to be slaughtered so that they would finally be freed and their salvation would be complete. And God had said to them, I'm going to take you to the promised land. And on that day, so many years later, it's fulfilled. They are now in the promised land. Now, of course, by now, you're probably freaking out. I know I would start freaking out because once they got up on shore and once the river started flowing at flood stage, what did that mean? No going back. Yeah, I would have been a little nervous. Like, well, I guess if we go to the first town and it's really bad, we could always head back across the Jordan River, right? Yeah, no, not going to happen. I love it when God does that. It's the phrase, burn the ships, right? When you burn the ships, what does burn the ships mean? That means if you were people that were traveling across the Atlantic and you had gotten to where you needed to go, and as you're there, do you burn the ships? Because if you burn the ships, that means you're not going back. You are committed to being here. You burn the ships. If you get married, you burn the ships. When you become a Christian, you burn the ships. You're not going back. Don't go back. It's terrible. When you step out in faith, you're not going back. When we stepped out in faith to launch Searchlight, there's no going back. Like, no, not going to work out. I had already left everything. The people had already left everything. We're going to go forward. Some of you are burning your ships, and some of them, your ships got burnt for you. You're not going to go back. And partially, God doesn't want you to go back. God wants you to go forward. God has something in plan for you, and it's amazing. Sometimes, though, he needs to flood the place so that you don't get tempted to head on back. Verse 20, and Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan. He said to the Israelites, in the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, what do these stones mean? Tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan just what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over. You've got to pass it on. You've got to tell others. Do not wait for others to educate your children or your grandchildren or your nieces or your nephews. You do it. Tell them about God. Make it important. And I wrote this, I picked this up from a commentary, but I thought this was a great thing. The greatest enemy of faith is forgetfulness. It's super easy to slowly drift away. It's super easy to just forget. It's super easy that, yeah, I'm a Christian, but I kind of forgot what that means. And sometimes it's great to be reminded. In verse 24, he did this so all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful and so that you might, and that you might always fear the Lord your God. Question, did this actually work? I believe that as that monument was built at Gilgal, I believe that there is a story in the Bible that actually shows that the monument worked. It's not super clean, but I give it to you anyway. When we studied the book of Judges not that long ago, we ran into a guy by the name of Ehud. He's an amazing judge. He's the left-handed judge that stabbed Fat King Eglon when he was on the toilet until his butt exploded and then got away. Do you remember that story? If you don't, like, you got to go and remember. It's a great story. It's one of the Bible is boring. Well, you're reading the wrong parts then, because Ehud, yeah, fat kings and swords do not mix. Ehud had several times had opportunities to do what God had asked him. And we talk about Ehud and almost all these glorious things, but I think Ehud was afraid. I think he was afraid because I think he'd forgotten. I think he'd forgotten how powerful God is. And Ehud was going to have to take a chance to trust that God was going to do what he said he was going to do. He had the opportunity. He had been chosen to be a part of a private delegation in order to give the tribute, which was the money, the foods, the offerings to this king. He had earned the trust of the king's guards and the king himself. And he was there alone with the king, and he was like, see you later, king. And he left. And it specifically talked about how he left and he is going and he's hiking all the way back to be with the people once again because they'd forgotten too. And it says that he approached the idols at Gilgal, which is an interesting phrase because the word idols could also mean stone quarries. And as I said before, sometimes these memorials became idols. I have a sneaking suspicion that the idols at Gilgal was the 12 stones set up right here. And I can imagine Ehud looking at that, and he said, years ago, God stopped the Jordan River, and the greatest miracle took place where we are now saved. How wonderful that is. And I bet as he stood there looking at it, remembering the stories that have been told down through the generations. Well, what happened here? Well, this is where God saved his people again and demonstrated his power. And I wonder if Ehud said, if God can do that, then I can trust that he's gonna save me and he's gonna help me. And he does. He turns back. He makes the hike all the way back to the king. He gets to the king and he's like, I got a private message for the king. And the king said, okay. But the king essentially is like, I have to use the bathroom. So he goes in and he says, King, I got a secret message for you. And he plunges the sword into his belly. And the king that had been so horrible, so mean, so nasty to the Israelite nation, as they had cried out for, Lord, please help us because this guy is crazy. He had finally been dispatched and he got away. And Israel had once again seen the power and demonstration of God. Now, some of you, as you remember what God has done in the past, maybe you need to take it out and shine it up a little bit. Maybe you need to take it out and remember again. Maybe you need to take a look again at a cross and remember its significance, or if you have it around your neck. Sometimes we need to do that throughout our lives. Sometimes we get so caught up in all the other things that the enemy of our faith is forgetfulness. And now it's time to remember. Do you want to know what God has done for you? Maybe you've forgotten. We just celebrated a couple weeks ago. A dead man came back to life. God killed death. Do you think he can handle your situation? Do you think he can watch over you? Do you think he's got you in the palm of his hand? Absolutely, he does. You don't have to be afraid. You don't have to fear. God is with you. God will always be with you. He brought a dead person back to life. Whatever's going on with you, he'll take care of it. So take it out, look at it a little bit, remind yourself of it, and pray, restore unto me the joy of my salvation. And watch God do amazing things. Let's pray. Lord, it's so hard when we forget. It is such a challenge when we lose sight, when that which is important is lost on us. And we are in need of remembering once again. We are in need of your reminder in our life. So we ask that as we come to you, that you will restore unto us the joy of our salvation, that whatever we find ourselves in, whether we're getting ready to graduate college, whether we're getting ready to end a relationship, whether we're getting ready to step out in this incredible faith, Lord, we are in need of you to restore unto us the joy of our salvation so that we might always know of your love and presence for us. Lord, thank you that you brought a dead man back to life. My problem don't seem so big anymore. For that, I'm thankful. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.